Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this episode, we speak to Shania, a young black adopted woman, and she shares her experience of adoption. Shania is the co-founder of Adoptee Futures and an advocate and campaigner for greater awareness of the realities of contemporary adoption. During this podcast, she is open and honest in her views, and you can find links to Adoptee Futures and to events that they are planning in the podcast notes. We hope you find it enlightening, and as always, if you've experience of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through Facebook or Twitter or email us at aandfpodcast@gmail.com.
My name's Shania. I'm 21 years old and I'm an adult adoptee. At birth, I went back and forth between my biological mother and my adoptive family. And my adoptive family at the time fostering. So I believe my story of adoption is a bit different to lots that I've heard. So when I was born, my parents were fostering and they really believe in family preservation. So they would foster children for a little while whilst their parents kind of got back on their feet. And then when the time came, the child would either go back to the parents or go on to long-term foster care or go on to be adopted. So they had children before, so they had an older daughter and a son, and they fostered me when I was about 4 weeks old. I was quite ill. I was born addicted to heroin, so I was quite ill. So they fostered me for a while and kind of went back and forth. And, they were told that my birth mother couldn't look after me, so they were asked if they could adopt me. And my dad, my mum is Black Jamaican, and my dad is white, and he's quite older. He's an older dad. So I'm 21 at the moment, and he's in his 70s. So my dad said, no, we can't adopt her. She needs to grow up in her own culture. She needs to grow up knowing who she is. And I'm an old dad. I won't be able to look after her in the way that she needs. So there was a lot of umming and ahhing, and where I grew up in East Sussex, there weren't many black families, and people were looking to adopt people of the same race as them. So I think that the social worker at the time kind of said to them, look, if you don't adopt this child, she will just stay in the system until who knows when. So there was a lot of debate of what was right, what was best for me. And I think that that is a theme in my story. People have, in their own way, tried to do what's best for me. So there was a lot of umming and ahhing. And so up until four, I was kind of fostered and I went back and forth because my birth mum, she was quite ill. She was a heroin addict. So she tried to look after me, went back and forth, and then I was adopted at 4 years old. So, yeah, my parents thought a lot about it. They adopted me at 4 years old. And I would say that as a child, I think that I used to think that I had a perfect childhood, if that makes sense. But now when I kind of look back, there are some behaviours that I displayed that were definitely to do with adoption. So I grew up with them, and then at the age of nine, I was lucky enough to be able to move to France with them. So I moved to France, lived there until the age of 14 when I came back to the UK. And I think that at that point, I started displaying some, how would you call it? Some difficult behaviours. When I look back, I think it was a cry for help. At the time, I was just angry. I didn't know why I was angry. And my mum kind of got to the point where she was like, look, she would always say, we are just parents, we're just parents, and we don't think that we can help you with this. So at the age of 14, I went into therapy. And at the time, I was just angry. I thought, why am I here? I don't need to be here. But so I had, they called it intense therapy. So twice a week for quite a while. And I didn't understand why, and I didn't really engage either. But I think it did help me heal a little bit. So yeah, I guess after that, I think it helped me heal a bit, but the behaviours got a bit worse because I don't think I was ready to kind of understand that it was to do with the adoption. I didn't really understand. So I kind of grew up, I guess. And at the age of 18, I was looking to go to university. So during this time when I'd been back in England, I had had contact with my birth mother. So she had recovered from her drug addiction. So I'd kind of had a bit of contact. I'd gone to see her a few times, and we had each other's phone numbers, so we'd kind of talk here and there. So at the age of 18, I was looking to go to university, and my parents kind of thought, okay, we want to give your birth mother the chance that she didn't have to be able to be a parent to you, which looking back must have been very difficult for them. But the way that my mum saw it was she wanted to welcome my birth family into our family so that we could be one big collective family together, which was lovely. I never felt any worry in kind of meeting them or going to live with them. So at the age of 18, I went up to London, the university, and I lived with my birth mother for a little while, but it went terribly. It didn't go very well. I don't think that she could cope. So yeah, that ended on really bad terms. And at the time I was doing a course that I really didn't enjoy. I was doing, I think, international relations with Chinese, and it really wasn't for me. So I had this really difficult time where I had the rupture in the relationship with my birth mother, and the course that I really didn't like. And I was kind of like, right, what am I going to do now? Where do I go from here? The world kind of seemed to fall apart, and I didn't know any other adoptees. I didn't really realize that adoption really affected me in any type of way, but I kind of had an inkling that there was more to adoption than I thought. When I was with my birth mother, she would kind of say to me, well, you know, you were adopted, so you had an amazing life, but your siblings, you know, they had to watch me go through all of this. You were adopted, it's amazing. And I think that is what started the inkling into, actually, there are so many different feelings that are being ignored here. So with that information, I was kind of looking at different things, looking at different courses. And the main thing that kept coming back to me was, I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels this way. I'm sure I'm not the only adoptee that feels that something is wrong, something is missing. I felt like I had so many emotions under the surface. I didn't understand them. I couldn't name them. I couldn't place them. And I kind of started to look back. I started journaling. I started to look back at my life and my childhood, the behaviours I displayed when I was little. And I wrote about it. I wrote a journal. And I looked at them and I thought, this isn't just me. This isn't just a me thing. It's definitely got to do with adoption. And so I'm not sure what happened. I've always loved psychology. I think I put it down to being nosy. I love learning about people. I love knowing the truth. I love kind of meeting new people, and I don't want to say reading them. I want to say understanding them. And so I was looking through courses to do with psychology, and I saw a counselling psychology course, and I thought, oh, like, okay, this fits perfectly. So I did a year of that. And during that year, I was researching professions, and I came upon the clinical psychology profession, and it seemed like everything just fell into place. So I swapped my course. I was able to swap my course and not defer a year. And I started doing clinical psychology. And at that time, I also applied for therapy through Adopt London South. They had an amazing post-adoption team, so amazing, so helpful. So I applied for therapy through the Adoption Support Fund. So I was kind of doing both of these things at the same time. And I started therapy, and honestly, it changed my life. It took a while for the funding to come through, but I think I'm about 35 sessions in, and it really helped me discover all of the behaviors in childhood and even in adulthood, the ways that I react, the way that I protect myself, the barriers that I build. It really helped me understand my coping strategies and to be more compassionate with myself. And it really kind of encouraged me to reach out to other adoptees and find the adoptee community, which I did. I think it's been about a year now that I've kind of been immersed in the adoptee community. So yeah, it inspired me to be really passionate about helping adult adoptees, because there's not a lot of support out there for us. I was kind of looking around at adoption agencies, adoption charities, for different types of support. And what really struck me was the fact that support for adoptees is often a second thought. So there's so much support out there for adoptive parents, but you have to search past a certain age. You have to search high and low for support for adoptees. And I kind of sat back and I thought, it's crazy, because I think it's 22 the funding stops. And that was crazy to me, because as a child, I think that it's important to have therapy, definitely, if you're adopted. But as a child, you're not old enough to fully understand the traumas of adoption. And I truly believe that healing starts with understanding what you've gone through. And it takes a while for that to happen, way into adulthood. So the fact that support for adopted adults is so hard to find, really, it really hurt me. It really frustrated me. So I was kind of like, okay, I really need to do something in some way. So at the same time, I was kind of on Twitter in the adoptee community. I was talking to a few adoptees, lots in the US and Canada, a few in the UK. And I met Annalisa, and we were kind of talking here and there. And then Clubhouse became a big thing, and there were loads of adoptees talking on there, which was amazing. And Annalisa and I kind of, we were having chats here and there, and we were so, how could I put it? I guess shocked and angry that there's such a lack of support for adult adoptees. So we kind of put our heads together, and we came up with the idea of starting a collective. by adoptees for adoptees, and we wanted to support adoptees in any way we could. So we started brainstorming, and we came up with Adoptee Futures, which is what we're just in the process of launching at the moment. And so our aim with Adoptee Futures is to reclaim the adoption narrative, because the narrative on adoption at the moment is so far from the truth. I think that the narrative is that when someone adopts a child, they're getting a brand new baby. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing that they've done, and they adopt the child, and they go away and they skip off into the sunset, happily ever after. And we can kind of see that. I can see that from people's reactions to when I'm adopted, when I tell them I'm adopted. So it might be, oh, you're so lucky. Oh, that must be nice. That's lovely. Your parents did such an amazing thing. And if I do mention that it's difficult, people either don't want to hear it or they're so surprised. So we kind of wanted to reclaim the narrative. We wanted adoption to be about the person who is adopted. We want the voices in adoption to be the people who have gone through it. We want to reclaim the narrative. And the second thing we wanted to do was reframe the world's views on adoption. Like I mentioned, the narrative at the moment in the world, and I say at the moment because I do believe that we can change it, is that adoption is a beautiful thing. So we kind of want to educate people, because in my opinion, if you're not adopted, then how can you know what it's truly like? I used to get frustrated when I used to tell people that I was adopted and it was difficult and they couldn't understand. But how can you understand if all you're seeing is movies with a beautiful adoption storyline? So we want to reframe the world's view on adoption. And the last, and I think the most important thing that we want to do is heal and help adoptees heal through their trauma, because I think that adoptees have been forced to be strong people. We're resilient. We don't necessarily want to be resilient, but we've had to be resilient. And there isn't a big focus on healing through what we've gone through. So those were our three main priorities. And so we're working on empowerment workshops for adoptees, because I think that many adoptees struggle with kind of low confidence and low self-esteem through the fact that we don't want to take up a lot of space, and also the fact that lots of us aren't in control. We don't own our stories. At the beginning of our life, we weren't in control of what happened to us. And we're told how to feel. We're told that adoption is a beautiful thing and we must feel this way. So lots of us don't want to take up space. So that's what the empowerment workshops are for. We also want to make support groups. There are support groups for adoptees. They're becoming more and more frequent, which is good, but regular support groups run by adoptees, I think, are super important, because there's a certain feeling about being in a space as an adoptee, being in a space with purely other adoptees. That feeling, I can't explain it. I felt it a lot when I was on Clubhouse. I'll try to explain it. The way that I thought about it was that being adopted isn't all of me, but it's a massive part of me. And I don't think that you can understand the feelings and the emotions unless you have been through it. And so I felt like throughout my life, people couldn't understand a big part of me. So being in a space where you can simply sit with other people and just be, and you feel like they understand that part of you without even having to speak, even just a look, just a smile, even being able to kind of laugh about silly things, like, you know, the things that people say to us, the questions that people ask, which are terrible, but being able to relate and say, gosh, yeah, why would someone ask that? So that feeling of an adoptee environment, a safe space, we think is super important. So that's where the support groups come in. We're not just for adoptees. We believe that the whole of the adoption triad needs support, obviously. So we want to do workshops for adoptive parents and prospective adoptive parents. Workshops and kind of training to kind of help adoptive parents understand adoption from the adoptee's point of view, understand what we've been through, and I think a mixture of the adoptee's perspective and adoptee parents' perspective would really help support future adoptive parents and current adoptive parents to fully understand adoption and to support their children. Because a lot of the trainings that are put out there are by professionals or adoptive parents. So I think the full scope of the birth parent's experience, which is often forgotten, the adoptee's experience and adoptive parent's experience would really give future adoptive parents a good understanding of what they're going into. So workshops and then support for birth parents, because all adoption, every single adoption is different. And I think that we often forget about the birth parent. And we want to support them through the loss that they've experienced. Obviously, every adoption has a different story, but from birth parents that I've spoken to, a lot of them have spoken to me about the feeling of shame and the feeling of not being able to go and get help because they felt like they were judged. So, yeah. We do think it's important to include everyone in what we are doing. And we're currently working on a really fun event. So we're going to be hosting an event in association with Armel, and it's going to be at the Festival of Debate. So we've got an amazing panel lined up, and we're going to be talking about the truths and the myths about adoption, which kind of fits in with the reclaim, reframe narrative. And we're also going to be kind of discussing a bit where we feel like we want adoption to go in the future, what changes we'd like to see, what support we'd like to see, and stuff like that. So tickets are free for that event, and you can find them on the Festival of Debate website. You can also find them on the Adoptee Futures Instagram, that's at Adoptee Futures. And we're going to be hosting lots of events, much more events to come, which is exciting. So, yeah.
You've articulated so many really interesting and really important points. And, you know, you've been so generous with your own story. And I mean, I had loads of questions as I was going along, and I was thinking, wow, it's so interesting to hear someone with such, you know, complicated early life experience. And sort of, were you always, can I ask you a few questions about that, if that's okay?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
So I was thinking about one of the areas that you highlighted at the end was this issue around birth family. And as you were growing up, were you kept sort of informed about how your birth family were doing? And was there that connection maintained throughout your childhood that sort of then led to you reconnecting at 18 in a more sort of a physical way? Or was it sort of tenuous, or was it regular? You know, can you describe that?
So my parents were always completely open with me about my adoption. And at the start of my life, I had letterbox contact with my birth mother and my birth father. I didn't get any letters back, unfortunately, but I think that the simple act of sitting down with my mum, choosing the pictures, she'd take pictures especially, choosing the pictures and writing the letters, that simple act was really helpful. So I'd always kind of known about them. And then at the age of, I want to say 10 or 12, I'm not sure how it happened. My mum and dad said I asked. I can't remember asking, but I guess that's what happened. I think it was offered for me to meet my birth mother. And so we were in France at the time. So we came back to England, met my birth mother. And then maybe a year later, the same thing, met my birth father. That was a social worker at the time. And then when we moved back to England, I kind of would, I'd have their numbers, my birth mother's number. I didn't have my birth father's number. So sometimes I'd go up and visit her, my sister, my brother. And it was, it just kind of worked. I'm not sure how I felt about it at the time. It's weird, it's a super weird feeling. She didn't feel like my mum, but she did feel like my mum in a weird way. So yeah, we kind of went back and forth. And then when I was 18, that's when I went to live with her. So yeah, I've always known about her. When I was younger, she didn't really reply because she was kind of getting back on her feet. But yeah, I've always been aware.
It's interesting because I think that's not the normal narrative, but there are no normal narratives. And it's interesting that then you're now trying to reframe, you know, that's really important, because I'm sure that as a child, that's really difficult to explain to people how you're living in this, you know, what is unusual by everyone else's standards.
Yeah, I think that it's hard for people to comprehend. And one of the things that I've been thinking about recently is, I think that a lot of adoptive parents worry about their child and the birth family. And I know that my mum expressed to me a long time afterwards, but she never made it show. She said to me, I thought that you were going to leave us. I thought that you were going to leave us for them and not speak to us. And she said, that really hurt. But if that's what you needed to do, then I wasn't going to stop you from doing that. And I think that one of the things that I'm thinking about a lot at the moment is the fact that adoptees can love more than one set of parents. Not every adoptee has to. We don't owe anyone anything. And like I said, every story is different. So people might have a good relationship with their adoptive parents and a bad one with their birth parents. And some other adoptees might have a horrible relationship with their adoptive parents, but a good one with their birth parents, or neither, or both. But I think it's important for people to know that adoptees can love more than one set of parents, as parents can love more than one child. It's the same for us. We can love both sets equally. Yeah.
No, I'm it's really encouraging to see you sort of speaking, and I'm really hopeful and optimistic, and I'm sort of, I know that, you know, Scott and I are watching with keen interest to see something develop that's going to be really positive for the community, that's not driven by adoptive parents. And I think that's something that's really sorely missing within the UK community, at least.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
So Shania, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I'm pretty sure this isn't the last we're going to hear of you, is it?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.